16, and that's the sport 2018-19 sport fishing rule simplification. This is a briefing and a public hearing. So, Steve et al.
Thank you, Chair Smith, Commissioners, whoever Director Unsworth wandered off to. I have with me today Chad Jackson, the Region 2 Fish Program Manager, and Chris Donnelly, the Region 1 Fish Program Manager. We are here today to visit with you just briefly about sport rule simplification. The primary purpose of our meeting today is to hear input from the public. Our outline is that we'll talk a little bit about our timeline, our public involvement, the public comments to date, and I'll make some notes about when we had to summarize those comments for you. Take any questions you might have, but again, the foremost part is to listen to what the public would like us to know before we make a decision as we go forward. Our timeline, we started this process back in January and had a significant amount of work with the staff to try to come up with proposals. In September through November, we've provided these proposals to the public and asked them to provide feedback. Our primary mechanism is that we had six regional workshops around the state. We also have had an online commenting process, and we'll talk in great detail about the online comments that have been received. We did file these. We gave you a brief in late October and filed the regulations for specific water bodies at the start of November and gave the public nearly a month opportunity to comment. Despite having a month, as usual, the great flurry of comments were received in the last 5 to 7 days, as folks usually do. So again, we're here today with the idea that we will brief you, remind you of what the proposals are, give you a little bit of handle on what the feedback was, but the biggest chore for today is to have additional opportunity for the public to provide some thoughts on the proposals to you folks. The commission will be taking action on these proposals in January. And as we listen to the final bits of comment here today, the agency will go back, consider the comments, not only the online comments, but what we do here today, and then come forward with recommendations in January for you to consider for action. Okay? So I'm going to take a few moments to just maybe lay the framework for what's going to come at you here for the rest of this presentation. Recall that simplifying the rules was one of the things that we heard most frequently at our Wild Futures workshops. We heard that around the state that folks felt it was important to make the rules clearer and easier to understand. The staff have taken this really seriously in trying as best we can to find ways to simplify these regulations. What I do know is that the package of proposals that we've put in front of you today and that we'll be considering in January has reduced the number of exceptions to the statewide rules from over 1,000 to about 700. So the package that you have in front of you represents a 30% reduction in special rules for areas. And that's, you know, we were serious about trying to make this easier for folks. Nonetheless, we do recognize that, you know, there's a balance here between opportunity and conservation and simplicity. And that's weighing each of those is going to be difficult as we move forward. I will say that in our conversations with our biologists throughout the state, I think every one of them gave something somewhere, whether it was on the opportunity end or on the simplicity end or on the conservation end. Everybody had to pitch in and contribute something to make this package come together. And I know it's going to be difficult when we get to January to think about how to make decisions to balance those. I think a couple thoughts that are prevalent with the comments that you're going to hear today and that we're going to summarize for you is these WACs are difficult to read and they're long. and the ability to transition from what we thought was a policy-type statement, like chumming, to what does that actually mean for my specific water body, that was a difficult task for the public to get their head wrapped around. I think you heard the gentleman from the Stillaguamish this morning talk about how hard that is to go through all those wells. The second thing I think is maybe a common theme that we heard is, well, it's great that you're out there trying to simplify the rules, and these proposals look really good, except when you get to my water body. And then I have a lot of concerns about what you want to do with the place that I fish. So just kind of some general thoughts as we get going into this. We had to summarize these rules just prior to the Thanksgiving break in order to have the presentation available to you folks in the public. So we've had a big flurry of rules come in at the end, and we'll try to update any changes from the general concepts that we presented here. But in general, the presentation pretty accurately reflects the responses that we saw online from the comments. So as of the presentation, we had about 933 comments. The final tally for online comments was just over 1,600. In case any of you are having trouble sleeping any night in the next month, we have provided you a link to where you can actually read each and every one of the comments. I know some folks are concerned about how we summarize them and have we accurately captured their concerns to their detail. Each of you has an opportunity to review all of those comments that, if you'd like. The heavy hitters, the hot button topics that we know are out there already are the special eliminating the special panfish limits. The second one was allowing chumming statewide. The third, eliminate the rule that says if you catch a trout with bait, it has to count towards your limit, whether you release it or keep it. And then specific adjustments to the statewide regulations for streams and rivers. At the time we put our presentation together, we'd heard considerable angst from the warm water community about extending the deregulation of walleye, bass, and catfish rules on the Columbia to all rivers and streams in the state. And then since this presentation was put together, I think we can say that a lot of concern over whether changing our stream paradigm to open and less listed and the potential that might have some additional conservation impacts on salmonids has been one that, it's not in the presentation, but certainly one that we have heard and that you will hear here later today, I'm sure. Those five particular areas accounted for well over half of the comments that we received. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chris, who will go through the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. For the record, Chris Donley, Region 1 Fish Program Manager in Spokane. So just to go through the specific proposals here, number one, allow chumming statewide. This essentially, we have exceptions in the rule now that allow chumming in certain Kokanee waters. The idea was to get rid of the exceptions and make it a statewide rule to allow chumming. And for simplicity's sake, we just quantified the public comments we got. So in parenthetics there, you'll see the total comments and then those support and those that oppose. Basically, some folks see it as increased opportunity to implement chumming, and like we heard from the individual from Summit Lake, there is some concerns about this could be a water quality impairment. Number two, eliminating the minimum length and daily limit on eastern brook trout. Essentially, this is a stream rule, getting rid of what we would consider somewhat of an invasive species in many of our places or many of our bodies of water. It looks like the vast majority of folks that we heard from about this do seem to support it. It is a way to reduce non-native species in places where they're problematic. The other thing that we should talk about, though, is that there will be exceptions to this rule like everything. One case in point is we specifically manage for eastern brook trout in Fish Lake, which is just to the north of Cheney, Washington. We don't intend to have a no-bag limit there. We will still manage for that. We also have several lakes in the Horsehaven Hills that are closed system. We don't see those fish get out into the open environment, and individuals like the fact that they can fish for brook trout there. eliminate mandatory steelhead retention. The intent here was to try to get rid of a rule that seemed to be reasonably ineffective. You can see who supports and opposed. We did hear some opposition concern that this was a rule that was beneficial for steelhead conservation, and most of the folks that supported removing it just thought it made it simpler not to have that rule there. Eliminate panfish special limits. So on some waters around the state, we have bag limits on panfish to reduce over-harvest. We heard considerable amount of opposition to this concept from large resorts in eastern Washington and a number of warm water anglers around the state. I would guess if we went back and looked at the 1,600 comments versus 200 that the overall number of comments on this would have ballooned considerably. I would anticipate that public comment that you'll hear after this presentation will likely hit heavily on this issue. Consistent language for game fish possession limits. We're all over the board for this in different places, and so we would like to get consistent rules that make it simpler for the angler to follow the possession limits for all species of fish can be harvested in the state. I did think, and it's a little bit interesting, though, we've always had possession limits in this state for all game fish. And if you look at the opposed comment that we have, apparently that individual's never followed the current possession limits that we have. So maybe for that individual, it would just make it obvious that we have possession limits. Removing duplicative landowner rules. This term is simply things like where a county says you can't operate an internal combustion motor on a body of water for a regulatory reason around water quality or public safety. Commonly, we had those rules in our pamphlet and therefore had to enforce them when they may have been a county ordinance or a city ordinance. We think it gets rid of lines in the pamphlet and makes it simpler if we're not supporting someone else's ordinance. You can read the support and oppose there. Seems to be reasonably split in terms of how the public feels about that. Separate trout and steelhead rules. Our current paradigm is that steelhead are dealt with as a trout that's greater than 20 inches, and it's led to a lot of confusion, and we get a number of questions as the managers about when is it open to steelhead fishing, and so we thought that if we just had separate trout and steelhead rules, that would lend clarity to the anglers. Again, I was a little bit surprised, but the public seemed to be somewhat split on this. From the opposed perspective, I think folks see a conservation risk in doing that. In support, I think folks see it as just being simpler like we had envisioned. Statewide standard rules for lakes, ponds, and reservoirs. The big one that you'll see here in the list that we have of bullets there is we have tried to contract a big, broad suite of options that were out there from a season setting perspective. We had April 1 and 4th Saturday in April and March 1st and different closure dates. What we asked biologists to do to simplify the rules as a whole was to pick from this suite of six options and apply that rule to all the lakes statewide, and year-round being the default, which is we were hoping that in the end we would have more year-round lakes. And then continued along with the lake rules, we also did, and you can see in this table, reflected somewhat the same thing as we did with the lake opener rules. We gave biologists a suite of options in terms of the trout limits they could pick. And so we've always had statewide rules in Washington. The top four listed there for trout now are all options that we can use. So you could pick a lake opener and a trout option for a limit that fits in there, so we could walk through that. Really, the rest of the statewide rules haven't changed. Kokanee now becomes a 10 fish limit everywhere statewide, as opposed to some places it's a trout limit and some places it was 15. We had, I'm guessing, 7 or 8 different kokanee rules when we started into this process, and would like to contract that to one. Bass, smallmouth, walleye, channel catfish, muskie, those all stay the same. And for panfish, the state rule has always been the default is there's no bag limit on panfish, But again, you'll hear from the public, and as I talked about earlier, there are bodies of water where we do currently have bag limits on panfish. Standardized juvenile-only waters. Essentially, we've got multiple kinds of juvenile-only waters that had different language around who could fish and who couldn't fish. And this is just to try to define that to where it's juvenile seniors greater than age 70 and anglers with disabilities can then access all of those waters. And this one did hit me a little bit strange. We actually had somebody opposed to this. So, in all seriousness, I think they were opposed to the fact that they just wanted kids to be able to fish this and not the other user groups. But in general, I think most folks think this is not a bad idea. Statewide standard rules for streams and rivers. The first bullet in this game fish season, I'll have an additional slide on that in the presentation, so I won't hit on it here. But the other rules to understand here is that our daily limit now becomes a minimum trout, or daily limit to minimum size 8 inches. Dolly Varden bull trout, as in the past, will be closed. Brook trout, no daily limit, no minimum length, so I hit on that earlier. Hatchery trout, this is a little bit different. We didn't get a lot of feedback from the public about it, but essentially what we're saying is the daily limit for any hatchery trout, so it doesn't matter what size it is going to be 2 a day, and it's open when game fish seasons are open. Essentially, this is an attempt to allow people to remove residualized steelhead smolts that otherwise will not outmigrate and return as adult steelhead. And then again, one that I think you're going to hear a lot of feedback from the public about today is removal of bag limits on bass, walleye, and channel catfish in rivers and streams statewide. So the comments when we compiled this in mid-November was around 62. I suspect it would be larger if we went and did that for you today. And most of the opposed that we saw at this point around the rule had to do with the removal of bass, walleye, and channel catfish limits. Steelhead incidental retention. Essentially, this is just saying if a body of water is going to be open for any kind of a game fish season and you come across a stray hatchery steelhead, you can keep it. And it allows to remove those stray fish that we otherwise wouldn't want to occur in that body of water. We didn't hear a lot of opposition about this. I think the folks that did oppose it maybe didn't understand the spirit of what we were proposing there, and thought maybe we weren't spreading our current limited resource of hatchery steelhead around properly, or there could have been a bit of a perceived conservation risk. Stream season for game fish, I talked about that as the full first bullet. We've been struggling with this one for several years around the state. We opened some streams in eastern Washington the Saturday before Memorial Day. We opened some streams the first Saturday in June, and some were June 1st, and there really wasn't any good sound logic around why we had one open over another. So we chose to go simplest and allow the most opportunity to the angler, which was to go to a default of the Saturday before Memorial Day through October 31st statewide. Rule regarding fishing for trout with bait, I think Steve hit on this early, that you'll likely hear a lot of public comment about this. Conceptually, we've heard a lot of feedback before we went into simplification about the fact that it's difficult to enforce, and what it really means is that if you're fishing with bait, the first 5 trout you catch, you need to count against your limit. Our intent was, from a simplification perspective, to eliminate that rule and just say catch and release with bait is allowed until you retain your daily limit that fits within the statewide limit. Statewide standardized season for whitefish. This is another one of those where all biologists seem to have a really good idea of how they wanted to run their whitefish season statewide, and unfortunately they weren't coalesced in a single opinion about when that should open and when it should close. And so we wanted to grind this down to a season that's statewide and predictable everywhere, which would be December 1st to the last day in February. And we didn't see a lot of opposition to this. Most people saw the logic in it. And with that, I think I will move it to Chad.
Thank you, Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. For the record, my name is Chad Jackson. I'm the Region 2 Fish Program Manager out of Ephrata. And my portion today of this presentation is to talk about the comments we've received on the special rules. And so on November 2nd, we posted on the website essentially our WACs for special rules. And so special rules are anything that are exception to the statewide, so a special season, a special bag limit. And this was to allow the public to comment on specific lakes or rivers to see how that rule would change, whether it would revert to statewide general, whether it would remain the same, or whether there would be a slight tweak to, say, a minimum size or a daily bag limit. And as both Chris and Steve had said at the time that we had to have this presentation put together, we had only had 50 comments on that. Well, that has since ballooned to about 500. However, what I do want to inform the commission is that of those 500, only about 150 or so actually dealt with specific waters. The other 400 and some actually addressed the topics that Chris just talked, because when the public goes onto our website, they see our entire set of WACs. And so when they would navigate through that, they would see where, for instance, we were eliminating the catch and release for trout with bait rule. And so that generated a lot of additional and duplicative comments on that. So what I'm going to be talking about today is still pretty accurate. I did check the rules before I came, or comments before I came in these rules, so I have a sheet here. But of the comments, there were, not surprisingly, a diverse array of comments provided. Some of them were targeted towards specific lakes or rivers, but there was a lot of them that essentially addressed philosophies or opinions on WDFW management strategies and or rule simplification. Next. And so just to kind of give you guys a little flavor of what we saw, and the rules that I've summarized here are ones that had multiple hits. They weren't just necessarily a single entry. So folks wanting to have the two-pole rule for areas in the lower Columbia River to fish for walleye, opposition for the change in gear restrictions on the Little Ponderay River. This is the section that goes through the National Wildlife Refuge. Elk Lake and Okanagan County, we had suggestions to change the daily bag limit to one of the options that Chris presented earlier. In Southeast Washington, there were several lakes where they wanted to retain a more restrictive trout bag limit. Additional ones for Eastern Washington and the Columbia River region, we received comments regarding lakes that are within the Columbia National Wildlife Refuge. They originally had an April 1st opener. We proposed to move those to a fourth Saturday in April. We received comments of folks either wanting to retain that April 1st opening or to move back to March. We also received comments on Jameson Lake in Douglas County wanting to retain the split season. In South Puget Sound in the coast, the comments were primarily dominated about Olympic Peninsula streams. There was suggestions on wanting to maintain anywhere about gear restrictions, fishing from floating devices, harvest for on wild resident trout. Some of them were in response to the change. I think some of them were also confused on what we were trying to do with those areas. And then in Central and North Puget Sound, the comments pretty much were dominated with folks recommending what the season structure should look like in the Still Aguamish River, and then quite a few regarding cutthroat in Lake Washington and Sammamish wanting to reduce the daily bag limit from a current of 5 down to 2. As far as other comments, this kind of goes in the realm of comments on our management philosophies or opinions. We had people concerned with our wild steelhead protections in Southeast Washington rivers. There wasn't suggestion on how we do with it, just concerns about stock status. Comments that we should just have a lot more year-round waters around the state and opening days aren't overly necessary. A lot of comments about wanting greater protections for coastal cutthroat trout in rivers and streams. And then equal comments on our performance on how we did simplifying, where we had pretty much equal comments that we did a great job simplifying rules and keep going, and then balanced out with comments that we didn't simplify anything.
And I think you're back to me. So one more reminder of our timeline. We have public comment immediately following our presentation. The department will carefully consider all of the comments that we hear and that we've seen online. We'll update the packet that you have with the summary of the comments for the January meeting, and based on our consideration of the comments, we'll provide recommendations. We may also provide some alternatives for some of the more controversial proposals if necessary. And then finally, if I could acknowledge two of our team members that are sitting behind me somewhere, I hope, but Kelly Henderson and Ben Power have also been instrumental in trying to make this come forward, and I know we often don't acknowledge some of the staff that really put in a lot of hours, but I would like to recognize them back there as well. With that, maybe open it up to any questions or move on to testimony if you'd like.
Thank you. Some questions. We do have about 30 now.
So. I think a good question. Steve, you mentioned in approaching this, you had three objectives, and that was and staff who were looking at it, conservation, opportunity, and simplification. I guess I would like a reassurance, and I hope that it's a reassurance for everyone, that simplification did not ever take priority over at least maintaining conservation and opportunity, and if possible, improving both of those.
Well, I said we're aware that there's a balance between those as we go forward. I don't know if I would just outright say that our objective was to try to achieve all three. Something's got to give whenever you try to do one or the other. We believe that the package has all of the conservation elements that are necessary. There is a comfort level that everybody is going to have, though, as to how much risk are you willing to take. I think we heard a little bit about risk earlier. And I know that some folks are more risk-averse and other folks are less risk-averse. You know, for example, I'm sure we're going to hear from a lot of folks that the concerns over anadromous salmonids, specifically ESA-listed steelhead and cutthroat, or just wild steelhead in general. You know, when we presented to you in October, we reminded you that, you know, our basic stream strategy is based upon a concept that you are providing conservation to those animals through the bag limit, the seasons that you're open, and the minimum size that you have in place. Whether that bag limit is your view of what's a good precautionary risk averse can be debated. I have no doubt that we have folks that would say we should never have a catch and release fishery anywhere in the state, and I have no doubt that we have folks that feel that we should never harvest another wild trout ever anywhere, and especially not with bait. So where on that spectrum folks lie, that's where we're going to be. We'll provide some recommendations on where our comfort level is, but ultimately that precautionary level that you folks want to take in terms of risk is going to be the decision that we're going to put in your lap and ask you to take. But yes, we are very cognizant of trying not to undermine any of our conservation objectives, but everybody has a different level of comfort there.
Quickly, kind of a process question. On the other side of things, the public input we've gotten, or that we've gotten as commissioners, or we're here today, I assume you'll take that back. You'll look at it. You'll make possibly some changes to these recommendations and or alternatives. I think probably the next time the commission will see those changes is in January at the meeting, as we get our books and we open it up and we're trying to figure out what changes got made. My question is, for instance, if I'm looking at item 4, 10, and 13 seem to be where I got the most input personally, as well as I think we'll hear about that. I'm at that point trying to see how that changed in a very quick setting. I may agree with all the other changes as proposed. Is there a process that you plan to use or can imagine to where we could pull out if there's just disagreement or we don't feel the public's was heard as commissioners, we could say, let's pull that one out, approve the package, and further discuss that. And often this comes to us as a full package, approve it or not. And it's in a awkward time frame at times.
Yeah, so Commissioner Keeney, you know, I think under Commissioner McIsaac's direction, we've been trying to get the packages to the commission earlier than we have in the past, right? Which is kind of this disconnect that I had between when we summarized everything and when the public comment period was. So I think the commission will have a couple weeks to see what it is the department's going to be proposing and recommending. As with many of the products that we bring to you, there is an opportunity on specific issues, if we haven't presented an alternative that you feel comfortable with, to have a floor motion for an amendment and to have the commission members specifically deal with a specific water body or issue. But we will do our best to be to forecast those issues which we think you are going to have some concerns with and give you some alternatives to chew on during the January meeting. So,
okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Well done. Well done. And again, I appreciate, Steve, what you said. Everybody wants changes unless it's a change that impacts something near and dear to them. So for everybody, we do have a whole bunch of folks that wanted to give public testimony, which is excellent. But please do adhere to the buzzer. You'll keep my blood pressure down if you do, and I appreciate that. So I'll call you up two at a time. Again, Mike Messenberg and Ron Sawyer, please. Take it away.
Okay. Dear commission members, thank you for hearing me today. My name is Mike Meesberg. Our family's owned Mardon Resort on Potholes Reservoir since 1972. We've witnessed the changes to the lake's fishery. The 60s and 70s were the heyday for panfish, with most people regularly taking 5 or 7 gallon buckets daily out of Potholes Reservoir. The 80s brought Mount St. Helens Ashpew, which choked out the spawn for several years. Plus, the lake was already suffering from overfishing of the 60s and 70s, and the fact that bass and walleye were eating their fair share as well. The 90s and the 2000s became a bass and walleye fishery as our nursery stocks became less and bleak. Novice fishermen were unable to catch fish. 90% of the fish were being caught by 10% of the people. We needed fish habitat to protect our nursery stock. Thus, the CWFAC was created. The CWFAC opposes the policy change to remove the limits on panfish on Banks Lake, Moses Lake, and Potholes Reservoir. We contribute three factors to the recent increase in size and quality of the perch, crappie, and bluegill on Potholes Reservoir. Number one, the Bureau of Reclamation implemented a new water level change in the last decade. The lake now is held higher for more water longer to allow the spawn to succeed. The WDF implementation of the size and quantity limits on perch, crappie, and bluegill have saved fish. Plus, an ongoing low-water habitat project put together by the Central Washington Fish Advisory Committee, a 20-year program, is in year 12, and we have 8 more years to make the lake into something that will provide fish for decades to come. The new Central Washington Fish Advisory Committee was established in 1994 as a 501c36 to bring awareness to warm water species. In the early 2000s, the thrust was changed from awareness to education. Now a 501c3, and the fish habitat project was permitted and started in 2005. As the lake was 50 years old and much of the habitat had eroded and was gone, the floor of the main body of Potholes Reservoir resembled a moonscape. We emulate a part of Lake Havasu project and permitted for a 20-year habitat project on Potholes Reservoir. We placed 4 by 8 foot boxes end-to-end to make artificial reefs. The need for habitat is during the low water on Potholes Reservoir, which experiences a 17 to 20 foot annual drop. The reservoir was built for irrigation purposes for agriculture. Fishing and tourism are byproducts. The reservoir is filled to high pool in May, and as the water is fed out, the canal drops the water level, and the north end of the reservoir becomes without water, and fish don't spawn. Now they spawn with the new management level. But the nursery stock has reached a point now with a very positive end. The permit allows for habitat reefs to collect the fish as they migrate out of the sand dune area to the main reservoir. To date, we've added 2,500 habitat boxes to the lake bottom, and we have underwater photography showing amazingly rich fish. Our nursery stock, which is non-existent in the 80s, 90s, is now beginning to thrive. In conclusion, it's taken years to begin the reversal of an overfished 60s and 70s. And all the work that's been done, it would be a shame to pull the plug on this now when we're just beginning to see the fruits of our labor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dedication that Mike Miesberg has shown to the Potholes Reservoir particularly and other resources in eastern Washington. His program of putting these boxes in the reservoir has been a monumental task. He's compiled a very long list of supporters that have helped subsidize the cost of this, but there's been a lot of volunteer time, and there's been a significant effort around this, and I just want to state my appreciation for that, and also listen to his message about conserving the forage fish and our major reservoirs.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for your leadership. Pete Fisher, please. And Ron?
Good morning. My name is Ron Sawyer. I own Cascade Marina on Moses Lake, one of the bodies that would be affected by the proposed elimination of panfish limits. The first time I testified here was 30 years ago, and I was with Mike's dad, and Rod Miesberg, and I'd like to acknowledge the efforts that Rod put in. His name is on the warm water fish hatchery because of his efforts. So what got me into this was a crash of our fishery. I've been in Moses Lake since 1980, and about the mid-80s, our fisheries crashed, so we thought. So we created the Central Washington Fish Advisory Committee, that would be Rod Miesberg and myself, and put together a coalition of business owners, tackle, beer distributors, et cetera, and tried to find out what was going on with our fisheries. When we went to our local biologists in Ephrata, we found out at that point there was no warm water department for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So our first task was to create that, and Mr. Miesberg was a very talented organizer, and we were successful in doing that. So now you have a warm water department, thanks largely to his efforts. We also have a budget. Some of you may not be as familiar with the warm water division of the Department of Wildlife, but you do have one. You have people out there in the field who are tasked with taking care of warm water fish in Washington State because of that. So my reason for being here today is that I don't want you to implement the panfish limits for a couple reasons. Primarily, we have a 30-year effort on Moses Lake and Potholes to restore our panfish. And our primary concerns with those bodies of water are during the drawdowns, we have extreme predation from walleye and from birds. Those are the things that the department identified as our limiting factors for our recovery of our fish populations. Bluegill, crappie, and perch are the three that would be affected by this regulation change. We have a very good working relationship with the department. Chad Jackson, I've known since he was in kindergarten. I confirmed that with him this morning. Couldn't remember exactly how long I know Chad. And Chris Donnell, I've known for a long, long time, too. He's from my hometown in Cheney. So it's not a matter that we're disagreeing with Chris and Chad's opinion, but at this point in time, there is no baseline data for Moses Lake or Potholes that they would be able to reference to. There haven't been any ongoing creel censuses, so their opinion that this won't hurt our fish populations is just that, it's an opinion. No baseline data, and there's no monitoring mechanism set up in this regulation change that would assure us ongoing that this is not going to harm our fisheries. I respect their opinion, but it is just opinion. The second thing that I'd like to leave you with is the people that are here now that are going to follow me will probably voice this also, is that this effort is seen as perhaps an attempt for the Department of Fish and Wildlife to get rid of all warm water fish in Washington State, and I think that's what it's going to be perceived at, and it will be a negative PR event for you. Thank you.
Kramer, please, and Pete.
Good morning, and thank you for your time. Excuse me. My name is Pete Fisher. I manage the Mardon Resort Tackle Shop and have been fishing the Potholes Reservoir Banks and Moses for about 35 years, and I oppose lifting the limits on these lakes. I primarily fish for bluegill, crappie, walleye, and bass, and this past year has been one of the best crappie and bluegill years I've had in those 35 years of fishing over there. And this experience is echoed from our customers, the customers that we rely on to stay in business. So that's very good to hear. It's encouraging to this point. Based on our numbers, this is Mardon's numbers, 72.4% of our overnight guests come from the west side. So it's very tourist-based. 95% of the fishermen and fisherwomen come to the reservoir to fish for panfish, bass, and walleye. As a resort, our business is very seasonal. We rely on basically June, July, and August, and we can't survive on those 3 months alone. So in turn, we rely on the shoulder months, 3 months before and after, to make it through the year. And that actually coincides nicely with some very productive warm water fishing. And basically, we depend on the quality fishing opportunities to draw anglers to these lakes in our area. Without a healthy warm water fish populations, we suffer as a resort, as do the economics of the region. Anglers come to these lakes to fish and, in the process, spend money on food, lodging, tackle, fuel, fishing licenses, and more. It's not, however, just about Mardon surviving. It's about us providing the goods and services that enable and encourage people to get out on the water to have the opportunity to experience an amazing fishery. I believe this is a common goal as well. Currently, our warm water fishery is extremely healthy on the Potholes Reservoir. The current limits, water level management, and the CWFAC's efforts on the Potholes Reservoir are all working in concert to produce an amazing fishery. Lifting the current limits on the panfish would have a negative and a direct and negative economic impact on all the businesses that benefit from these healthy fisheries, as well as a negative impact on the fisheries themselves. Please, please do not lift the limits. Thank you.
Ron Terra.
Good morning once again, Commissioners, Director. Appreciate the opportunity to testify once again. I applaud the agency's and the Commission's effort to simplify the pamphlet. It's clearly you took that effort very seriously. You assigned your A-team to the project. Well done. As the guys went through some of the common stuff, I was struck by a couple things. First and foremost, the only thing more complex in this state's fisheries resource is our user groups, and you're dealing with that. I was down memory lane. Many of the comments were very similar to what we heard in the 30s and 30 and 40 years ago. It's going forward with this. I would encourage you, when you get to the balancing game between opportunity and conservations, and when in doubt, put the thumb a little bit on the conservation side, please. I just have one other comment. I've talked to a lot of people about this change, and it's really a complex effort, as you well know. It's hard to get your fingers on what's going to exactly happen, and especially people that haven't dealt with this problem before, and even some of us have dealt with it a lot. I encourage you, once the final product is done, that you give the folks a chance to see it, and there will be comments about it and concerns about it, and give them a chance to re-engage or get a second bite of the apple in a relatively short period of time. I think waiting for 3 years to comment on what these changes may or may not have been would be doing a disservice to the user groups, and just something to consider in the process. Again, thank you for your time and efforts.
Thank you again, Chris. Edward Atkinson, please. And Ron?
My name is Ron Parra. I'm really going to be talking about the policy proposal. The rules proposal came out very, very late. The simplification is a good idea, but some of the proposals are not. They do not reflect the idea of sport fishing. My comments are going to be on the following five proposals: chumming, the separate trout and steelhead rules, steelhead are the statewide standards on rivers and stream seasons, and fishing with bait. The following numbered comments are to the DFW proposal. Chumming. Chumming should not be allowed. Should not be allowed in any waters where trout are present. The separate trout and steelhead rules The difference is the fact that Omicus is the same. Trout, steelhead, they're the same. The WDFW report on February 1st, 2008 addressed it. They said it was Omicus. This is the same as rainbow trout. There is no difference. If we define a steelhead as a rainbow trout over 20 inches, this will take from the gene pool resident rainbows that are large and should be returned to the spawn. Wild fish should not be taken in any of the main rivers, only hatchery stock. The statewide standards apply. The statewide standards, number 10, apply to all rivers and streams unless this is an exception. Well, the thing is, it's a good idea, but the exceptions are the major part. The rules just came out, and they are huge, and trying to address them individually was very difficult. I looked at, and our fly club looked at the river for this North Fork, and those regulations, those proposed changes to the Stillaguamish system, we addressed in the rules proposal, and we've put it in as our comments. The stream season for game fish is a standardizing game fish season really doesn't reflect the opportunity to fish on many of the river systems in the Puget Sound freshwater area. Many system opportunities are well past the October 31st date. Also, the starting date would allow many salmon smolts to be injured. A June 1st date would allow for their escapement. This first the Saturday before Memorial Day could be as early as the 23rd of May. There's still salmon smolt in the system. Also, the last one is fishing for trout with bait. It's a very bad idea. If you catch a trout with bait, more than likely it's going to die if you try to release it. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. Jonathan Stump, please. And Edward?
I'm Edward Atkinson from Granite Falls. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the commission. I want to address three of these proposed rule simplifications. The first one is chumming. My view is chumming should be the exception and not the rule. Certainly, chumming should never be allowed on lakes that are designated as fly fishing only or selective gear rules. Unrestricted chumming allows people to dump all kinds of organic material into lakes, resulting in added nutrients that lead to algae blooms. Some lakes are more prone to algae blooms than others. As an example, last year on Lone Lake, which is on Whidbey Island, there was a 100% trout kill due to lack of dissolved oxygen from algae blooms and other factors. Rule simplification is good, but oversimplification is bad when it harms the resource. The second item I want to comment on is the standardizing the stream seasons for game fish. I agree that starting dates for streams should be standardized, but I also agree with Ron Perro, who stated that the Saturday before Memorial Day can occur pretty early in May, like May 23rd, and there's still substantial numbers of wild steelhead that are spawning in late May. So we ought to standardize on a start date for rivers and streams that's in June, like June 1st. And finally, I want to comment on the proposal for changing the rule on releasing or keeping fish, trout, when fishing with bait. All trout caught with bait should count toward the daily limit. Many studies have shown that fish mortality increases substantially when bait is used, especially with barbed hooks. Most of these fish are hooked deep in the mouth or throat and bleed when the barbed hook is removed. Releasing these fish is essentially releasing dead fish. As proposed, this rule will allow a bait angler to kill many more fish than simply the kept fish. So those are my comments, and again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Chase Pinnell, please.
Good morning, Commission and Director Unsworth. My name is Jonathan Stumpf. I am a board member with the Wild Steelhead Coalition. As an organization that is led by passionate anglers and conservationists and guided by advisors, including experienced scientists and retired fisheries managers, we're generally supportive of the work that WDFW is undertaking to simplify the sport fishing rules in our home state, starting with the freshwater regulations. However, we do have some serious concerns with several of the proposals due to their potential to increase wild steelhead mortality, as well as to unnecessarily increase harvest of wild rainbow and sea-run coastal cutthroat trout in areas of anadromy and where wild steelhead are also present. Wild steelhead, as well as wild resident rainbow trout that interbreed with steelhead and contribute to their genetic diversity and population resiliency, require responsible and conservation-oriented management. Wild coastal cutthroat trout, particularly anadromous or sea-run cutthroat, also provide important, sustainable angling opportunities in both fresh and saltwater and are sometimes confused with resident rainbow trout. While we support sustainable catch and release, selective gear fisheries where abundance allows, we oppose weakening fisheries regulations targeted upon steelhead as well as wild rainbow and coastal cutthroat trout regulations across watersheds within wild steelhead range and below barriers to anadromy. This latter issue is problematic as some anglers retaining trout may not discern whether their catch is a coastal cutthroat or resident rainbow and anadromous cutthroat trout populations should not be subject to increased harvest until a better understanding of their abundance population trends and the value of a catch-and-release sea-run cutthroat trout fishery is more widely available. So the three particular proposals that were put forth during this process that we are concerned with are numbers 3, 7, and 10. Number 3, eliminate the mandatory hatchery steelhead retention. Because these fish are produced explicitly for harvest and because of the impacts they have on struggling wild steelhead populations, we are greatly concerned about proposals to roll back mandatory hatchery steelhead retention rules currently in place statewide. We strongly support retaining the sensible and appropriate regulation as it currently is written. Number 7, separate trout and steelhead rules. And we are strongly opposed to any regulations that increase harvest or retention opportunities for wild rainbow trout or wild coastal cutthroat trout in areas of anadromy. And then number 10, the statewide standards. While we support standardizing and even liberalizing retention limits for hatchery trout, we strongly urge WDFW not to open additional or increased harvest opportunity for wild trout in areas of anadromy in order to protect wild runs and sustainable angling opportunities. So thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Yeah.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning, Commissioners and Director Unsworth. For those of you I haven't had the opportunity to meet, my name is Chase Gunnell. I'm an angler, a hunter, and a conservationist. I grew up fishing for salmon on Puget Sound and steelhead in the Skykomish River. In the decades since, I've fished across our state for about every species imaginable, using every gear imaginable, bait, gear, flies, I use it all. The sustainable fishing opportunities and quality access to the outdoors are part of what contributes to the quality of life I have in this state, and I want to make sure they stick around. I'm here today as a board member of the Wild Steelhead Coalition, and I have a few concerns about the policy proposals that Jonathan just addressed. First, I should note that myself and my community of anglers that I fish with and hunt with and spend time outdoors with are generally supportive of this process, and I want to thank you for moving it forward. Our regulations do need some simplification. But first, I want to talk about rule number 3, that rollback of mandatory hatchery steelhead retention. This is a straightforward regulation that's currently in place statewide. Many of us worked hard to get it implemented. Rolling it back and breaking it up is not simplification. I think we all know, and the science is clear, that hatchery steelhead contribute negative effects to wild steelhead populations. Now, I'm not an anti-hatchery guy. I think we need to have a diverse portfolio of steelhead management. We need to have wild rivers for wild fish and rivers with hatchery fish for harvest and fishing opportunity. But when hatchery steelhead are caught, they should be kept. It's as simple as that. And mandating that statewide, it makes it a simple regulation that's easy to follow, and it reduces opportunities for confusion. It also allows for sustainable angling opportunity. If I happen to catch my limit of hatchery fish, that's a good day, and I'll leave the river and I'll share it to someone else. And on fisheries like the Grand Ronde or some of the fisheries out on the coast, that's an important element as we have increasing crowds and increasing number of anglers on the water. So I would urge you to reject rule proposal number 3 and leave mandatory hatchery steelhead retention statewide in place. The other concerns I have, similar to Jonathan, are rule proposals number 7 and 10. And it's very important to me that wild resident rainbow trout and wild coastal cutthroat are conserved appropriately. Both of these fish have unique benefits. They contribute to the health and resilience of our wild steelhead runs. And in the case of sea run cutthroat, they're already providing an increasingly popular and increasingly important sustainable fishery, a fishery that supports a number of anglers like myself in the absence of what used to be stronger steelhead and salmon fisheries, and local communities. There's a lot of fly shops and tackle shops that benefit greatly from our sea-run cutthroat fisheries. So I would hate to see those fisheries jeopardized or the health of our wild steelhead runs jeopardized through increased harvest of resident rainbow trout and coastal cutthroat trout. I would encourage you to see that if rules number 7 and 10 are implemented, they are written in a way that does not increase the harvest of wild resident rainbow trout or wild coastal cutthroat in areas of anadromy, areas where they interact with wild steelhead and salmon. I would ask you to make sure that that is not increased through the implementation of these proposals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for you. Yes, thank you for your testimony. A question about the mandatory retention of hatchery steelhead. So what would you tell the fellow who goes out and travels quite a ways and is looking forward to going fishing for steelhead and not keeping any? And lo and behold, he catches 2 hatchery steelhead on his first 2 casts of the day and was going to fish all day.
I guess I'd first congratulate him. I drive a long ways to fish for salmon and steelhead, and I typically don't catch one of my first 2 casts. So I think he's had a pretty good day. I understand his concern about keeping those fish. Some people might be morally opposed to keeping fish. But in most cases, there's another guy in the river that you could share it with. There's a friend or a neighbor back home that you could share the fish with. Maybe you've got a neighbor who's got some rose bushes that could use some fertilizer. There's other ways to benefit from this hatchery product, this fish that's been created explicitly for harvest and fishing opportunity. That person doesn't necessarily need to be the one that utilizes it. Now, I know that may not be what that person would preference, but if that is their intent, that they do not harvest fish, there's plenty of other wild-directed fisheries for them to pursue as well. So I think there's a range of opportunities in regards to what they could do in that situation. Any other questions?
We used to always use carp for the rose bush.
Yeah.
Mitch? Sims?
Yeah, looks like the waiters.
Bobby.
All right. Good morning, Commission. My name is Bobby Foster. I, like Rich, Chase, and Jonathan, am a board member of the Wild Steel Coalition, and I thank you for having us this morning. My views will follow in line with Jonathan and Chase. To keep it simple, I'll just outline the 3 rule simplifications that I'm most concerned with, beginning with rule number 3. And as we've established at this point, I believe it'd be a misstep for the state to eliminate this rule. There's established science or research showing interaction between hatchery and wild fish. It occurs, and furthermore, that interaction leads to a negative effect on their general genetic health. This was an interaction I observed working for the department on the Medhow River for 2 seasons. The interaction does occur, and the genetic diversity is diminished when those fish are able to successfully spawn together. In addition to this rule as a conservation measure, specifically in terms of stock health, allowing seasons later and extending seasons to use the mandatory retention as a management tool has given more angling opportunity. I know that's not the current case, but in years past, the Medhow and Wenatchee Rivers have been open later in the season in order to further thin out the hatchery populations. So eliminating that would essentially be eliminating a tool that has been used in the past. A rule that I noticed is not being brought up or doesn't seem to be much of a concern is rule number 6, removing duplicative landowner rules. While this, I understand this, and the effort to try to streamline the regulation pamphlet, specifically, the outlined example is county ordinances stating no use of floating device equipped with an internal combustion motor. I'll point to a specific example. Before we had access to smartphones, I had observed numerous occasions where I saw recreational fishing on the Sauk taking place with a jet boat. And if it weren't for a physical regulation pamphlet that I was able to refer to, and I know that most people refer to and that as a fishing community is our greatest resource when it comes to rules, I wouldn't have been able to contact law enforcement and let them know that combustion motor was being used. And it is very difficult in some of the locations to access county ordinances and to find that sort of legal framework without having access to something like our regulation pamphlet. And lastly, rule number 7, separating steelhead daily limits and trout rules. As we've all kind of hit on numerous times, wild trout and wild steelhead have a direct relationship. They essentially are the same fish, and managing them together is something that should go forward.
Hi, my name is Rich Sims, founding board member for the Wild Steelhead Coalition. I'm a lifelong angler, lifelong citizen of the state of Washington. I've fished here all my life. I helped found the organization based on a concern about steelhead in our state, and it's kept me driven into trying to do better for the fish in our state and make this state a great place to fish for wild steelhead. First of all, I'd like to thank the commission. I'd like to thank Director Unsworth and the staff for allowing us these public hearings and the ability to talk about important issues. Very much appreciated. First of all, you know, the Wild Steelhead Coalition has, over the years, really worked hard for some of the regulations and some of them that we want to simplify here today. Some strong concerns and some potential risks to steelhead, wild steelhead, and even potentially making some of the rules more complex. I'd like to iterate that I really support and endorse what Barry had to say earlier on. He was spot on a lot of his talk and a lot of his studies in wild steelhead and rainbow trout interactions. I talked to him during the break. And again, we're starting to see a lot more life history starting to play out with steelhead in the systems. I guess, again, the idea of the mandatory retention of wild or hatchery steelhead was to get the fish out of the system, which is interesting to me because we encourage like even 3 fish limits on the coast. We even have a regulation that you want to simplify to have steelhead incidental retention regulation in place, which is great. Again, mandatory retention by law, it helps make it a requirement. It helps get the fish out of the system. And I think that's a very important thing. I think they're there for harvest, and they should be harvested. And we need to get them out of the system as they play a detriment to wild steelhead. Again, the whole separate of trout and steelhead rules. I guess I'm perplexed. How can we do that when these fish are, when rainbow trout and steelhead are basically the same thing and you want to separate them out? That doesn't make sense to me, especially when these fish are playing an important life history and are part of potential wild steelhead recovery. I think we need to protect them. I think the way we can make it more simple is to make it a full, you know, release of all wild rainbow trout and especially systems of anadromy. And to me, it's very important. So please do so. Protect the fish. Thanks.
felony.
Hello, my name is Craig Schaber, and I'm here to present on behalf of the Inland Empire Bass Club in Spokane, Washington. I would like to thank the WDFW commissioners for giving us this chance to speak on behalf of our interests in the proposed bass limit removal proposal for rivers and streams across Washington. I would especially like to thank the WDFW for reaching out to the bass fishing community and letting us know that these proposals were coming open for public comment. I remember spending an hour on the phone with Bruce Baker from my work site in Mexico expressing my concern about the bass limit removal on the Snake in Colombia when we became aware of it after those public meetings had occurred that time, and never feeling like we got a chance to speak up for our interests. We have since come to understand and accept that there were strong political motivations to remove bass limits to protect salmon and steelhead on certain waters in the state. However, I think these events illustrate what I want to say. Bass fishermen weren't very involved in the political process or changing of limits because until the Snake and Columbia River proposals were completed, the bass regulations were pretty much the same year after year. The current proposal will add confusion to all bass fishermen that fish waters across the state. Many of our favorite bass waters have creeks flowing into them, which creates small backwaters that are favorite feeding and spawning sites for bass. With the proposed removal of bass limits in rivers and streams, we will now have to ask ourselves where the rules change in every one of these locations. I count approximately 56 creeks with backwaters coming into Roosevelt alone. If I am in a backwater and there's water motion towards a lake, is this following river or lake rules? What if the reservoir level changes? Where is it then? The proposed removal of limits also opens these prime areas to excessive harvest of quality fish by those uninterested in the long-term survival of the species or quality of the fishery. Additionally, it removes limits on prime bass waters that have nothing to do with the salmon and steelhead challenges on places like the Pend Oreille River and Long Lake on the Spokane River. To prevent this, WDFW has to either write in special regulations for all these bodies of water to protect them, or we have the possibility of ruining bass fishing across the state. In my email sent November 27, 2017 to each of you, you have seen my data from our annual Snake River Tournament, which suggests that these rule changes can have a negative impact on a fishery and that we don't have enough data to fully understand the impact of such a massive rule change across the state. On behalf of the Inland Empire Bass Club and all fishermen I have spoken with, I request that you reconsider your proposal and either leave the bass rules as they are, or, if you're truly interested in rule reduction, apply the statewide bass limit rules as you currently have them to all bodies of water outside the Snake and Columbia Rivers and their tributaries from the Grand Coulee Dam to the ocean. This could be written in the general rules, and no further exceptions would be needed in the pamphlet. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Craig. It's not a question. I'm just going to make a comment, but I do want to acknowledge that I've heard from our warm water fishers over in eastern Washington, and have been reminded about what an important stakeholder group they are, just in terms of proportion of fishers, especially in my neck of the woods. And these are very important fisheries for this group of anglers. A comment was made by one of the panfish fishers earlier that there's a real concern that this is the first step in closing down these fisheries. We were talking about sort of the camel's nose under the tent, and I just want to say that I acknowledge that concern and hope that we think about it in the rule changes.
David Slater, please.
Hi. Today I came to talk about this issue with the rule changes, specifically to talk about number 13, about fishing for five fish with bait and that you get to keep fishing. And I was just appalled by the whole thing, you know, back to the whole idea that this is about conservation and then opportunity and then simplification, that so how many fish are going to die because they get gut hooked and they eat the bait? So is the idea of simplification that it makes it simpler for enforcement, because it's really hard for enforcement, as Fish and Wildlife showed us on one of the lists of the reasons why? It just blows my brain. I understand that this is a complex issue. Every lake has its own individual issues and own individual concerns, whether it's panfish limits and it's going to blow a fishery out and make all of these people unhappy that they spent all of this time working on, or it's chumming on lakes. The bottom line is that all of these proposals are being made, and I just can't figure out why. Simplification, simple to make it easier. But these are complex issues. This isn't something that you can make easier in this way. Whack-a-mole. You hit one thing down and something else is going to pop up and you've got all of these ramifications. And this is crazy. How about just saying no to all of it? You know, look at all of them individually, and when people are going, I don't think so, it should just get thrown out as the idea and thought was about how do we do changes? Can we just eliminate specific proposals? How about throwing a whole bunch of them out the window? When the majority of the public says no, how about no? It just doesn't make any sense to me. When they talk about the whole idea of we get to one that he didn't even understand why one person would say no about the seniors and about fishing with juveniles, I can tell you why. Because you look at seniors and you don't know if that person's over 70 or not. You don't know if they're 65, 60. There's people using the system illegally all of the time, and enforcement isn't doing their job. Sometimes I think that this is more about enforcement. Is this about revenue, up or down, providing opportunities, selling more licenses? Some people have to have a level of responsibility and understanding of what the rules are. And when you want to keep it stupid, we're taking away that level of responsibility of using your brains. I don't like the idea of chumming. I don't like the idea of these limits on the panfish. Every single one of these rules that I've seen gone by that were no real interest to me because I don't do that fishery, I just still sit here and I go, I can't believe that these are the ideas that are coming out. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Clearer and easier to understand. Simplify the rules. We're dropping them from 1,000 to 700, but we create more nuances and more problems of trying to do enforcement. And that, to me, is what the real problem is all about here, is about enforcement. And enforcement says, well, we have a problem in doing that. We have a problem in doing that. So, last note, this group, you know, Seattle, we're all the 12th man here, you know, and that's the direction that we go. So when people clap, they're not necessarily clapping to tell you that they support the idea. Sometimes they're clapping for me to let me know that I've done a good job. And, you know, just want to say it.
Joel Mania, please, and David. Hi. My name is David Slater. I've been bass fishing for about as long as I can remember, and I've been competitive fishing since about 9. And whenever I have the opportunity to go fish Moses Lake, Potholes, Banks Lake, they're my favorite lakes in the state. And the reason why they're my favorite lakes in the state is, quite frankly, you go there and you catch big bass. That's what I'd like to do. The reason why I can go out there and catch big bass is because of the conservation that occurred back in the 80s about the panfish. I'd just like to express my concerns about the panfish limits and how it kind of led to where I am today and how I'm able to go out and catch these fish and enjoy what was left for me, and I want to be able to do that for my kids and grandkids in turn. On top of that, I'd also like to express my concerns with the opening up the bass limits on the tributaries leading to the Snake River and the Columbia. It's not going to be long before people figure out that when the bass are on beds, especially smallmouth bass, they're feisty little critters, especially when they get protective of their nests. And it is very, very easy to catch these fish. In fact, you can catch them 8-10 times again and again and again just because they're territorial. And somebody who knows, who can go out to the shallows in the springtime and catch all these fish, I mean, it could decimate the population, potentially. So, other than that, wrapping it up.
Dan Anderson, please.
Joel? My name is Joel India. I'm here. I do want to thank Kim Thorburn and Jay. Kim spent extra time with us at the Inland Empire Bass Club, where I used to be a member. And Jay, thank you for the response to. So it's great that you guys are listening and reading what we're sending. My background is through the Inland Empire Bass Club. I've been a sportsman all my life. I started the first junior bass club in Washington State, and through those efforts, kids like David came up through competitive bass fishing. And I probably didn't know this, but our state holds 4 junior Bassmaster world record or world championships, more than any state in the United States. And so you can see why we're very protective of our bass fisheries, because there's more to it than just the economics. There are the intrinsic values. So that's my background. What we're proposing is a true simplification of the rules. I think it's pretty acknowledged that the current proposal is complicating and complicates the rules, but keeping the warm water species limits and ideally expand them everywhere. I know that everybody says the snake and Columbia are, you know, off the table, but expanding those, keeping those limits to preserve the fisheries, especially on bass on our behalf. I think what that does, you know, we were charged a warm water species stamp several years ago, and we're kind of wondering what happened to all that money, because we really haven't seen warm water species habitat enhancement. And I think this represents 2 opportunities. One, and I would commit personal time to help do this, is to grow the collegiate and high school bass fishing in Washington State so that we can be a national powerhouse. There are 610 collegiate bass fishing teams in the United States. Washington State has 1, and that's a shame. We should have more, and we'd like to engage the state to assist us and help grow the sport. And so the opportunity here is not to shrink it back, not to damage the warm water fisheries, but help us grow this sport, and for the state to potentially build something like that into the budget to help grow the sport of warm water species, and particularly bass fishing, where a kid can earn a scholarship to go to college. You can't really do that when you're fishing salmon. And so nationwide, that's important. The other thing is there really is no data.
What's
the number one? Well, probably, you know, one of the southern states, potentially. Eastern Washington University had a club, has a club. Yeah, no, that's all right. But, yeah, there are 610 of them around the country, and they're giant national organizations that would help us promote this. So, anyway, in closing, I think we want to preserve the bass fishery, continue to increase warm water species, and as well as enable us to change and take advantage of this opportunity, get more people out fishing. I think that's where we're all about, is getting more people out using the resource, and certainly to expand what we do. And I think that's also an opportunity for us to work with the state to expand it and to increase trust, because honestly, in working on this for the last couple of months, I think there's a little bit of lack of trust. And we think this is a secondary opportunity that we can use to build trust and to build the sport and to increase not only the economics but the intrinsic value of sports fishing and growth in the sport. And thank you very much for your time.
We have a forum that we can vent that, so we know how to get hold of it. You guys know each other?
Okay. Came through this, and he's a professional bass fisherman in Alabama now. So yeah, I'd be happy to work with you to develop that part of the sport.
Dwayne Swenson, please, and Dan.
I'm Dan Anderson. I'm the conservation director for the Washington State Bass Federation. We are members of the TBF, the Bass Federation, and FLW. And we're a group of people that have a strong youth and conservation programs. And we support their idea of simplification. The existing pamphlet is far too complicated and confusing to many people that fish. However, there are 2 items that we do not like. Listed under the statewide rules that apply to the rivers and streams, 1, the bass, channel catfish, and walleye in rivers and streams. No daily limit, no minimum size. And 2, the elimination of panfish special limits. That action would remove daily limits for panfish species such as perch, crappie, bluegill, pumpkin seed on specific waters. We represent the bass fishermen of Washington State are against the above changes. I know that other warm water fishermen are also against these changes. We oppose the removal of daily catch and possession limits on warm water species in our rivers, streams, and lakes. Many in our organization believe that the State Game Department has the intention of removing all bass and warm water fish from the waters of Washington State. And this is just the first step. First the rivers, then Lake Washington, Lake Sammamish, and finally all the lakes in Washington State. I was on the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Inland Fisheries Policy Advisory Committee about 8 years ago, and the state gave us a lot of information, including the fact that there was no serious predation of salmon by warm water fish. It is difficult to believe that major changes have occurred since that time. This change in the rules has more to do with federal funding, and we would like to see that the state, the director and commissioners, stand up against these feds if they're giving you ultimatums on what you need to be doing in order to get that funding. Now, a couple of years ago, when the state removed the limits on warm water fish, the boundary was set, we believe, with little scientific data from the mouth of the Columbia to the Chief Joseph Dam near the town of Bridgeport, Washington. If the commission implements this rule, I would like to ask you to take off such lakes as Lake Wallula, which is where the Columbia River passes through the Tri-Cities, off the list by dropping the upper boundary from to McNary Dam near Umatilla. Now, we really do believe that the limits should be put back on the rivers. If you truly want simplification, then the rivers that you've already taken off should really go and coincide with the existing rules of the lakes. Now, if you do implement these rules, we also would ask that the some language would be added to make it very difficult to be amended and expanded in the future. And finally, we are also opposed to the removal of the daily catch and possession limits of warm water species such as bluegill, pumpkin seed, in hopes of protecting our fantastic warm water fisheries on all lakes. This is equivalent to legal poaching. People will fill their 5-gallon buckets until no fish are left. And more importantly, these fisheries provide for the forage of largemouth, smallmouth, and walleye. With the limits that are currently in place, without the limits that are currently in place, the forage base will disappear, literally by the truckload. Once again, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dan. Greg Schimmick, please. Sorry if I got that wrong.
You're coming. Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joy.
Oh, it's okay. Thanks to the commission and to the director for this opportunity today. A little street cred, I'm a lifelong angler, and in my prior life I was a tournament fisherman, and today I'm speaking as a resident of Summit Lake. Excuse me. I respectfully request that Summit Lake be excluded from the statewide chumming proposal. Over 90% of us pull our drinking water from the lake and our cooking water. Salt Lake is a watershed. That means that everything on the ground will migrate into the lake, you know, organic or inorganic. This past summer, we experienced an 8-week toxic period of algae bloom. This meant for most of us hauling our water in for drinking and cooking, bathing and laundry were expected to be done elsewhere. Quite an inconvenience. We are one of the smallest minorities in Washington State that source our drinking water from the body of water that we live on or next to. We are right now experiencing yet another toxic bloom right now. This means more inconveniences that affects our quality of life. Who knows how long this one will last? Apparently only sunlight breaks down the algae bloom, and that sunlight's in a short supply this time of year. The Summit Lake Association has developed a water quality committee and are working with the UW to study and develop best practices and hopefully new standards for living on and around the lake. Chumming will only introduce more organic matter into the lake, which in turn only feeds the toxin. To me, this means that not only while fishing do people chum, but at the end of the day, fishermen will typically dump out that can of corn. It goes into the bottom of the lake and sits there and decomposes and just feeds the toxin. So when there, I just want, last thing I want to say is when there's an algae bloom on the lake that's toxic, it's not just close to us, it's close to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. Joni England Fuchs, please, and Greg.
Thank you very much, Chairman Smith, and ladies and gentlemen of the of the Commission. My name is Greg Schimmick. I'm the Executive Director of the Coastal Cutthroat Coalition. I'd like to be noted that I'm speaking today not on the behalf of the Coalition, but on behalf of myself. The Coalition members have written themselves testimony into the Department, so it's just from my point of view. I'd like to speak on two of the proposals. First, number 10, where all streams and rivers will be managed under statewide regulations. Basically, that's a change going from all streams and rivers being closed with exceptions to now all streams and rivers being open with exceptions. I believe that there's plenty of streams and tributaries that certainly can be opened, certainly in eastern Washington and some of the mountainous areas. But many of the small streams that are named and unnamed that are within the greater Puget Sound area have been closed up until this time because they are spawning streams for coastal cutthroat trout, as well as rainbow trout and other salmonids. They're also rearing streams for those juveniles of those species. So they're protected right now. So if we open those streams up, they're going to be open to catch and release, or to catch and keep fisheries with baited hooks. We know, for an example, that baited hooks, and this kind of addresses the baited hook issue as well, number 13, that hooking mortality studies show that baited hooks on coastal cutthroat trout in the stream environment can be as high as 58.1%. And in non-anadromous waters for rainbow trouts, it can be in the high 40% range. So with these streams that could possibly be opened now, where they're closed for protection, it can really have an impact on distinct genetic strains of coastal cutthroat trout within greater Puget Sound. I'd certainly like the commission to look strongly at number 10, all streams versus open versus closed. Rule simplification is a great idea, and I think it really needs to be done. But if you look at that particular proposal, if you want to fish a stream now, you have to go to the pamphlet to see if it's open and how it's open. If you go to open unless listed, you still have to go to the pamphlet to see how that stream can be fished. The inference is that it's open, but how is it open? Is it catch and release? Is it single point barbless hooks? And so it doesn't uncomplicate the rules regulations. So please look at number 10 and number 13, and I would like you to oppose those. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Nick Chambers and Joni.
Joni England Fuchs, and I'm a member of the board out at Salmon Lake. And I want to thank you all, commissioners, director. I would not want your job for all of Teen China. especially you,
director. Cold coffee.
I you've heard the details about our lake. I think Director Unsworth, when there was the issue of opening the lakes, you saw the tenacity and the heart of our community. We are very unique out at Summit Lake because we actually have a community, a small town that a lot of us remember, a sense of community, people that care, people that share. Since the water was, you know, we had the algae problem back in May. We've put a water quality system in place, an educational system that the majority of our members are getting educated on what helps with the water, what is a deterrent. A lot of people have been coming out and talking to us. We're working with UW on having water tested. Chumming just adds another mess. And I guess what I'm asking for is this board to use not only your book learning and what you've learned from doctors and everything else, but please use your logic and your heart and your common sense when you are making these decisions. And yes, I am. I know, you know, Vaughn said we didn't want to be special. I damn well want to be special. We are unique. We drink from that lake. We work hard to keep that lake clean. And you should be very proud of the fact that there's a lake in Washington that actually is clean still. And we want to keep it that way. So please listen. And as somebody who gave up fishing, because I can't figure out the damn book, I'm sorry, it is so friggin' complicated. The more simpler you can make it, I think that's great. But I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your ability to listen to all of these people. Thank you.
Thank you, and we think you're special. So. And Nick, I owe you lunch, too, buddy. Yeah, you forgot about that. And calling up Robert Rao, please. Nick?
All right, thank you all for the opportunity to comment today. I'll try to keep it brief and just focus on talk to you about, and that is I strongly oppose the proposal to change the statewide standard from closed unless listed as open to open unless specifically noted as closed. And I'm sure there's some places in the state that should be open that are currently closed, but those places should be specifically open based on their merits and not as a blanket statement. And as far as simplification goes, I'm not exactly sure how this is supposed to work. So, for example, in the Sole Duck, there are 13 major salmon and steelhead spawning tributaries that are important, and currently only two of them are open for part of the year for fishing. And so if the rule change was adopted, the state would have to list 11 streams as closed to maintain the current standard. And so if those streams were simply open, they would fall under statewide regulations, which with the current proposals would liberalize both the use of bait and the harvest of wild trout. So, you know, as many other folks have said today, that presents some potential problems and conservation concerns for our wild steelhead populations, which throughout the state are not generally doing particularly well. And so while this may create a little bit of opportunity in the short term, I feel like it's somewhat of a short-sighted proposal. And really, if we want to maximize our opportunity to fish, and particularly for wild steelhead, we should be maximizing the productivity of our wild steelhead populations, because that's really what constrains our fisheries in this state. So, you know, for example, in many of our Columbia tributaries, we have to get so many wild steelhead back before we're even allowed to fish in those places. And so if we really want to have a season, we need to be maximizing the productivity of these populations. And particularly if we want to engage like the next generation of anglers and people in the future and still have these opportunities to go fishing, we need to manage conservatively now. And maybe, you know, it's okay to err on the side of caution if we're not 100% sure. So I would ask that we do that. And one last thing I want to throw in is, you know, there's really no silver bullet for salmon recovery in this state, and we need to take an all-age approach on that. And so in that vein, I also ask you to adopt to use proposal to open suction dredge mining reform for the entire state of Washington. So thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Slip that one in there, too. That was good. And Ian said... Okay, thank you, Robert. I tried.
Yeah, I have three concerns. I'll make the first two pretty short, as my main concern will take a little longer. I totally support the folks that have spoken against lifting the panfish limits. I think it's a ridiculous point of view to even think about stepping on conservation efforts by doing that. We have more than enough people in this state that will kill as many fish as they're allowed to, and when the number is infinity, we all know where that leads. My second one is there's talk of a separate rule book for freshwater and saltwater and everything else. Well, you know, if somebody talks about giving up fishing because they can't understand the book right now, I think they need to go back to school, because it can be figured out if you just put a little bit of time into it. Having separate books will just make the whole thing more expensive and more complicated. You can simplify the book, but don't give us a library. Now, my major point of concern is the rule lifting the restrictions on bait with trout. That is the most abhorrent change I can even begin to imagine. when this rule was proposed and we went to the first meetings, I was told that it was an enforcement issue, that it's impossible to enforce this regulation. That is a lie. You can sit with binoculars and watch what people are doing. They release more than five fish. You go see what they're using to catch those fish. It's not rocket scientists. We've got a lot of law enforcement people in this state that are getting rather lazy about doing their job, and they're starting to pressure the commission into making rules to make their life easier? I don't think so. Not at the cost of our fisheries, not at the cost of the resources we pay for. I watched somebody at Summit Lake after a stocking incident last year just catching and ripping hooks out and throwing the fish back over and over again. After the fifth fish, I got in his face, and he slowed down. And he had to think about releasing fish more carefully. But I couldn't get enforcement to come up there. And I was 10 minutes away from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which disgusted the hell out of me. Let me tell you, when I can't get people up there, when obvious poaching things are going on, because, well, we don't have anybody in this area. Well, I suggest maybe a lieutenant or something get off his butt and drive out there and do his job. I'm tired of our regulations being changed to benefit the ease in which law enforcement can do it. It's not a way to do it. This steps in the face of all proper conservation technique. To even consider it is a slap in the face to all responsible fishermen. If you don't have this rule on the book, people will kill as many fish as they can. People are already doing it to high-grade out fish. I see it all the time. And it needs to stop. And you cannot encourage these people by saying, oh, well, people want to fish all day. We want to increase their opportunity. You ever see an otter get into a hatchery? They kill every fish and they eat not one because the killing instinct is going on. Some people have that instinct, and we need to keep it in check by a law.
Russ Baker, please. And Ian.
Okay, so I am opposed to lifting the limits on panfish and warm water species in rivers and streams across Washington. Bass fishing is everything for me. I spend any free time that I have, pretty much all my free money and anything on it, and I want to preserve these waters and for the next generations. And I really feel that passing these would be the start to eradicating the species out of the state entirely. That's pretty much all I got. So, thank you.
Thanks, Ian. And Zip, is it Decker? Zip? Russ? Oh, he did? Okay. And Zip? I think that's Decker? Last name Decker? No? Okay. Well, thank you all. I think, you know, it's been said that your input's very important, and let me tell you, as a guy that grew up in the Great Lakes area, all those warm water species are the ones I was raised on, so you have a defender in one of us here. So you can clap on that. That's all right. Yeah. Every time you mention one of those, because I live in Bellingham now, you know, so you don't hear a whole lot about those, but every time you mention crappie or perch or bluegill, my memory bank was flashing forward, or bass and all that stuff. So good stuff. Okay, well, thank you very much. That was very informative, and I know Steve et al. Were taking copious notes and all that stuff, so we'll move ahead. Again, moving